Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, committed to conservation and careful management of the state's forests to make them more resilient and better habitats for wildlife. Choosewood.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. On October 7th, Hamas attacked Israel. The Palestinian militant group killed more than 1,000 Israeli civilians and some 300 soldiers. It also took about 220 hostages. Israel responded with airstrikes that have decimated the Gaza Strip, and their military assault in Gaza intensified this weekend. The Gaza Health Ministry says Israeli forces have killed more than 8,000 Palestinians since the start of this most recent war. Palestinian grad student Intima Abuhulu came to St. Louis University last year to pursue her master's degree in public health. Born in 1996, Intima grew up in the Gaza Strip. That's where most of her family lives now. Prior to Israeli airstrikes hitting their home, they lived in Nusra Camp, a Palestinian refugee camp in the center of Gaza. Intima's family identifies as Palestinian refugees. Her grandparents were born in the southern part of Palestine called Bar Seba. After the 1948 Arab-Israeli War, they were expelled to the Gaza Strip. 1 week ago, Intima spoke with STLPR reporter Andrea Henderson about what she's heard from her family in Gaza and to share what it's like to be in St. Louis during the war. Here's Intima.
I was in the seventh grade when I saw dead bodies in the ground for the first time in my life. We were taking like final tests and we were excited that it's going to be the final exam and then we're going to summer vacation and the bombing started and we had to evacuate school. So we were running in the streets and there were a lot of dead bodies in the street. So Gaza is a city of love and war. So I've witnessed good things, but I also witnessed really bad, traumatizing things that I think for us as Palestinians, we will never recover because the trauma is ongoing. Mm-hmm. And for all of us, like as Palestinians, especially people from Gaza, all of us have some form of PTSD. Because having lived for wars over Gaza, now I have flashbacks of what is happening. I know what my family are going through. I know what my parents are going through. I know the smell. I know the sound. I know the smoke. I can imagine the amount of death and destruction. But this war is just so inhumane. I mean, bombing schools, hospitals, churches, and getting away with it, it means that we failed as a human. The last wars over Gaza were hard and devastating, but this war is, I think it's the cruelest war that the history of the world has ever lived, because seeing people getting killed, seeing hospitals being bombed, seeing children and women being massacred, it means that we failed as a human.
So you said that this war is different from any of the other ones that you have experienced. Do you remember what year, are you talking about the war in 2007?
2007, yeah.
Okay, so what do you think is different from, I know you talked about the schools being bombed and the hospitals and things of that nature. With you not actually being there to witness this war, what are you seeing or what is your family telling you that is totally different from the last war, the 2007 war?
The inhumanity in their actions, they're known for committing crimes, but this level of crimes, the level of inhumane crimes, is just beyond believable. Like my family, when I talked to them 5 days ago, they said to me, like, what you see in the media is nothing like what is happening now. Like, it's even worse, it's even harder, it's even more cruel than what is the media. Like, no media in the world, no newsletter can cover what is actually happening. They told me that we're living in hell. We're living in, like, living a life when you expect to die at any given moment. Living a life that you, when it's too much emotionally, physically consuming. So they tell me, we're tired. We don't care about food. We don't care about water. We don't care about all the international aid that they're bragging that they're providing Gaza with. We just want to be able to take a breath safely. We want this to end. We want to see, like, we want them to declare ceasefire because we're tired. We're tired from everything going.
Yeah. And so on October 7th, had you spoken with your family that day once the invasion started? What was it like that first day?
We were talking about, like, the consequences of what happened because we knew that the outcomes are going to be really bad. And I was so worried because I knew what is going to come. I knew that it's going to be a dead mission. I knew that the people of Gaza, the civilians, the children, the women are going to pay the biggest price. I knew that that lives will be taken, places will be destroyed. I knew that this is going to literally lead us to war that in which we're not an equal, like, we don't have an equal power, a war that we can't survive.
So when we talk about your family, who are we specifically talking about? Is it your mom, your dad, your siblings?
So my household, there are 19 people living in it. My mom, my dad, my siblings were 11. Two of my brothers are married and they have kids. So the total number is 19. And our house, like, have 3 floors. My brother's, like, living in different floors, and the unmarried, we live in one floor and with my parents, and the married brothers live in the different floors.
So living in Gaza, most of the families, they do live in big kind of families together. And you talk about it being a kind of a safe space for you and things, or for your family. Would you say, what were some of your memories besides the war about growing up in Gaza?
I mean, the family time, like when we used to go to the beach, spend time together as a family, meeting my friends, hosting all this family gathering, inviting people over. It was a good times. Even like hanging out with our neighbors and like doing like more, because the community in Gaza is very family oriented and very neighbor oriented. So you have like, it's cultural thing that you have to take care of your neighbor and your neighbor has to take care of you. So whenever like we host something, we always like, you know, invite our neighbors and our neighbors do the same thing. So we're very like community oriented. We have strong ties as a community. We're very well bonded. So I miss that. Like, I miss that part because like coming here to the US, it's like, it's been a different experience because I don't want to make it general, but it's like a different community, a different culture, a different perspective. So I really miss that about like my home city, like how we used to take care of each other as neighbors, as family members, how we used like to do, to spend time together.
And now when you kind of reflect on that and thinking about what's actually happening now, do you feel like that part of things won't ever be the same again?
I mean, my neighborhood was completely destroyed. The refugee camp that I grew up in and walked in the street for 26 years of my life were completely burned yesterday because they have targeted 3 bakeries and the bakeries had gas on it. So when they pumped the bakeries, that leads to massive gas explosion that had led to the complete burn of the entire refugee camp.
And so you say your refugee camp, the town that you are familiar with, you know, all these areas have been totally destroyed. And when you go back to, you said the first day you spoke to your family and they said, you know, things are crazy here. It's nothing like what you're seeing on television. Do you remember like hearing things in the background? Were people, how did they feel? Can you kind of like explain just how did they sound while talking to you?
They sound scared. And the last time I talked to my parents, it's the first time in my life to sense that they're scared. Because, you know, during the wars, my parents tend to be strong and solid because they wanted to reassure us. They wanted, like, you know, to provide us with safety. But it's the first time in my life to ever feel that my parents are scared too. My mom worries to me were difficult. She told me like, I don't know if we're gonna stay alive or not, but whatever happens, just stay strong, take care of yourself, take care of your health, take care of your study, and always keep in contact with your sister, because I have a sister, she's in Qatar. So she told me, my mom was telling me like, you should take care of each other. Whatever happens, you have your sister to support you, and you should support your sister. So it was like hearing like a farewell wishes from your parents, because they don't know if they're gonna wake up alive or not. They're not like, even to them it was the most like, you know, scary part would be the night, because they would bomb in a crazy way. But now it's even like during the day, from what I heard from them, that during the day they've been committing massacres. Like, my mom told me like my brother was trying to get water for them, and they bombed a house. Like, he was walking very close to the house, because you never know, like, he want to bring water, like, it's nowhere safe. Like, you'd be targeted at any time, at any given time. They are now taking shelter in honor schools because they think that it's a safe place. Because honor schools, it's like the United Nations. You know what is honor stand for?
Mm-mm.
It's the United Nations Relief and Work Agency for Palestinian Refugees.
Okay.
So it's an operating agency for the United Nations. So honor schools should be protected by international laws. So that's why people are taking shelter in the honor schools, because they think it's safe place. But since the beginning of the war, they have bombed 5 honor schools, while more than 10,000 Palestinians are taking shelter there.
Mm-hmm.
So no place is safe. That's the thing, that you can't walk out, you can't get your basics, because at any given time you would be targeted.
So 10 days went by after your mom, the first day she told you to take care of your sister. She's not sure if, you know, if the family is going to be alive or it's just like walking dead. What do you remember, or what was going through your mind, and how did you kind of take care of yourself for those 10 days that went by until you were able to speak to your family again? And how did you get back in contact with them?
I was physically here, but my heart and my mind was with my family and my people. I was feeling guilty the entire time, you know, being here, being in a safe place, having access to food, internet, water, while your parents and your people are starving, while your parents and your people are not safe, and I couldn't help but to feel guilty and to wish to be there with them, to wish to be there to hug my nephews. Because my sister, she sent me a video of her 5-year son telling her, like, my mom, like, mom, I don't want you to die. I don't want my sister to die. I don't want my grandparents to die. And asking her, like, is it going to be painful if we died? If we died and we're under the rebels, will my grandfather come to help and take us from under the rebels? Will anyone come? And it was hard hearing that, like hearing this, you know, how a 5-year kid around the world, like, he should be in a park or, you know, going to school, while a 5-year old kid in Gaza is thinking about death. it's like we're living in a different realities from what we should be living to what we're actually living.
So it's difficult, obviously. I was getting emotional with you as well, just thinking about, you know, like you said, you're safe, you have water, you can walk outside and not worry about being bombed or being attacked or anything like that. So it seemed to me that it was taking you, you know, some time to kind of get yourself together for those 10 yep. days. Were you like looking at all the news or like looking at videos and things like that? Because I know that could be kind of hard. Were you doing that?
I mean, I was doing that for the past 11 days. But now I'm in a point that I feel numb because my mind stopped processing what is happening. Because I would be watching the news and, you know, seeing massacres, and then watch, like, then another news would come and another massacre and another. It's just hard, you know, to process all of that. So when people ask me, are you okay? I say I'm okay, but I know deep down that I'm not okay. And I know like being numb is an alarming thing, but it's just, I can't process what's happening. It's too much of processing. It's too much for a human to process seeing his people being killed in this way, seeing, being worried all the time about his family, if they're alive or not, seeing his, like, checking just the Facebook and seeing, like, losing one friend, like, another friend, like, it's just hard, you know? It's just hard, like, a lot of things to process.
Yeah. Have you been getting any support here at the school and things of that nature, or in your community that you're in?
My professors have been very supportive, and the university reached out to me, offering me services, on like talking to therapists, like the mental health counseling. But the thing about like going for therapy or talking to a specialist is just like I have to re-talk about it and I have to relive it again. And I'm a point that I'm numb, that I can't talk more about it, you know, because it will hurt me very much to relive and to re-talk and trying to explain to people that is, yeah, that happens in some part of the world. Because a lot of people tend not to know that there's a country called Palestine exists, that there's people in Gaza are being brutally killed right at this moment. So it's gonna consume me more, because I've already like spent, it took a lot of my energy just in the last couple of semesters just to explain to people, yeah, there is a country called Palestine, that there's people in Gaza, that the situation is Gaza, it's hard. So I'm happy that a lot of my classmates started to do their research and learn more about Palestine, and a lot of them reached out to me to show their support and to say that we're sorry for what's happening, because you as Palestinian, you feel like you're responsible to educate the people about your country, though like people should know, you know.
We need to take a quick break. We'll hear more of their exchange when we return. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, providing more than 41,000 jobs in the production of wood pallets, railroad ties, white oak barrels, hardwood floors, and more. Details at choosewood.com.
Welcome back. Palestinian grad student Intima Ebehulu came to St. Louis University last year to pursue her master's degree in public health. Born in 1996, Intima grew up in the Gaza Strip. That's where most of her family lives now. When she last heard from her family, on October 17th, they were sheltering at a United Nations Relief and Works Agency school. 1 week ago, Intima talked with STLPR reporter Andrea Henderson to share what she's heard from her family in Gaza and what it's like to be in St. Louis during this war. Here's Intima.
So my mom, my parents, and my siblings are taking children to honor school, and that day they had to rent a generator because they had, like, among the other families, there were patients with cancer. So they needed to, like, to rent a generator, so they were able to charge their cell phones and get connected to internet. And my mom, she's the one that texted me, because a mom will always be a mom, so she was worried about me, like, though I should be the one that is concerned about them, she was like making sure that I'm okay instead of me making sure that they're okay.
What did she say to you?
Just the same thing, like, take care of yourself, take care of your health, eat well, don't talk a lot about it. You're in a country that wants to protect you. You're a foreigner here. So don't talk about it. Just know that I love you and I'm proud of you and that I always pray for you.
So when you saw that message come through, what were you thinking?
I was happy that they're okay. But I was heartbroken because it seemed like a farewell message. You know, imagine your parents telling you, like, we may die at any time, so you take care of yourself. It was hard reading these messages.
Have you spoken with any of your friends or anybody else that may possibly be, under attack as well?
Whenever I check my news feed on Facebook, I see another family that I know wiped out. A lot of my friends and their entire families got killed. And
I'm so sorry to hear that.
And, you know, it is hard to reach out to them during this time because, you know, the internet a problem. And, you know, I have no words to tell them. Because I know how it feels. I just feel speechless. You know, what can I say? What can I say that can make you feel safe? What can I say that can make you feel better? Nothing would I say would make you feel better, but to pray for them.
So when you spoke with your mom last, did she say anything about her going out to, or the family trying to get to the borders?
No, they're going to stay? Even if they ask, like, there's something about Palestinian, like, we're refugees, and being asked to be a refugee for the second time and to leave, my parents and a lot of people in Gaza would have preferred to die in their own house, in their own city, rather than being a refugee in for the second time, or rather than leaving their areas, because if they want to carry on with evacuating people and asking them to go to a southern part of Gaza so they can expel us to Sinai, that's not going to happen. People won't leave. I guarantee you, like, people would prefer to have to be completely killed rather than leaving, rather than being a refugees for the second time, rather than witnessing another Palestinian catastrophe, another Palestinian Nakba. So they won't leave, no.
Yeah.
Because if you left, it means that you're given up in your identity, you're given up in your existence as Palestinian.
So you said earlier that your family, you and other Palestinian people, the folks in Gaza, the Gaza Strip, they want a ceasefire.
Yeah.
So has your family said anything about that, or what has been happening? Do we know it? Do they know anything that's happening on their end, or are they continuing to see?
The thing is, it's like everyone is watching the Palestinians are being brutally killed, the massacres that are being committed, the dead bodies of children and women, and no one is talking about ceasefire. They're talking about international aid. Like, they're ignoring the one solution, the one immediate action that is need to be taken right at this moment, and they're calling for international aid. That's not what the people of Gaza want now. The people of Gaza want to be able to breathe, because they have not been able to breathe since October the 7th. So I don't know, like, how it is all these countries around the world, they're not, you know, advocating for ceasefires, just make me lose hope in this world. Now it's not a matter of religion, it's not a matter of Hamas, it's not a matter of any political things, it's a matter of humanity, and what is happening is beyond inhumane. You know, everyone is seeing what is happening in Gaza. They no longer can hide the truth, and they're just not doing anything about it, which just makes me hate this world, which makes me lose my trust in humanity, lose my trust in other countries.
So if the ceasefire happens, what would be the next step? What would be the next possible step that you would like to see happen for the people of Gaza, the ones who are living in Gaza Strip? And now also parts of the West Bank is being attacked, they're under attack as well. So what would you like to see? I know you said you want a ceasefire, but after that, if that happens?
I mean, it's going to be a very, very long to recover for Gaza. With the amount of death and destruction, it's going to be a really long road for them. It will never be the same anymore after what happens. It will take people a lot of time just to be able, like, you know, to pursue a normal life. And a normal life in Gaza is different than it's what a normal life in other countries look like.
And what's a normal life like in Gaza before this war that we have now?
Poverty, unemployment, having electricity 4 hours a day. When I first came here, I was like, I'm not used to having electricity 24 hours. I felt something old. I felt like I'm not used to this. As the same thing when I first came here, I saw like malls for the first time in my life. I've seen parks for the first time in my life. I was able to do something fun for the first time in my life here when I first came here.
Because all of your life previously, you have been, you know, under siege. And
exactly. And all what I said, I'm the product of war. Like, all what I've seen is death, destructions, having to live every day. Like, so there's a military plane that keeps hovering in Gaza sky, like, in a daily basis. It's like, you know, 24 hours. Like, we can hear it. I think I have a record of that.
You can play it.
That is the sound. That's like... this is like the normal sound, like not even during the war. And it gets intensified, like it gets really loud during the war. You know, imagine like living your life and...
24/7, you'll hear...
24 hours, this is like never leaves the sky of Gaza. You have to, it's
like you all are under surveillance. Exactly. 24 hours a day.
Exactly. So it is like they fully control us, like by air, by land, by sea. That's why like they call Gaza an open air jail. You know, like you're not in cage, but everything sounds like a cage.
You know, it just sounds like a movie, but it's real life.
Yeah, and that's what I meant when I told you that it is too consuming for me to explain to people that this was my reality before coming here to the US, that I have gone through this, that I have lived this. They don't seem to believe me. Even when I talk about it, sometimes I feel like I don't believe myself. You know, I was. Like when I had to do a lot of presentation and, you know, explain the political and the historical and the humanitarian situation in Gaza, I myself, like, I have like this thought, how did I go through all of this? How did I get out of this? You know, it's just, you know, sometimes to me, like, what my people have left, it's just beyond believable.
Yeah, and just thinking about your family there now, you know, I'm thinking about them, you know, sheltering up and with the rest of your family, your aunts, your uncles, your cousins, your little cousin, the one who was saying, I don't want to, you know, die underneath the rubbles. Would grandpa come and pick me up? You know, I'm just thinking about all of this.
This is him, my 5 years nephew. His name is Bedr. Bedr.
B-E-D-E-R?
Oh, yeah. It means the moon in English.
Oh, my gosh. I love that. He's so cute. And so when you're thinking about little Bedr, you know, you...
I wish that I can hug him. I wish that I can bring him to the U.S. I wish I can, you know, let him live the normal life that a child of his age live here in the U.S. Like, I really wish that I can take him. I really wish I can bring him here because he's just innocent. He's too, you know, he's too young to live all of that, you know, to think about death, to think about, you know, to be terrified.
What do you want, or what do you, yeah, what do you want folks here in the St. Louis region to know about Palestinian people or Gazan people?
I want them to read the history of Palestine. I want them not to believe what is being, you know, published in media or like a newsletter. I want them to listen to people with lived experiences. I want them to educate themselves before like victimizing the war criminals and to like making us look like the bad people, because we're not. We're the victim here. And what media has been doing so far is just making us look like we're criminals, and that is not true. I want people to acknowledge our existence. I want people to acknowledge our suffering. I want people to understand the entirety of the situation. I want people to say, to stand up for us. I want people to stand up for humanity. If they don't want to stand up for Palestine, it's fine. But stand up for humanity. Stand up for people. For what is happening is inhumane. And you as a human, if you let this happen, then you should think about your morals. You should rethink about your values.
I've been hearing that a lot of students, or some students around the St. Louis area who attend universities in the area, has been a bit upset with their leaders, mm-hmm. with their messages to the students and mm-hmm. to faculty. What are your thoughts on ways that St. Louis University could be a bit more supportive, if you feel like they are supportive, mm-hmm. in what ways are they being supportive? And if you don't feel like that, what ways do you feel like you need more support in?
I mean, when the president like sends the emails, I responded to him. I responded to him and telling him that you need to acknowledge the entirety of the situation, and I'm not satisfied for you as Palestinians with the lining of your email, because it sounded just like a racist email. But I told him that in a nice way.
Have you gotten a response?
Yeah, he responded to me. And he told me that he will keep reflecting on my email, and he told me to talk to the student. He directed me to someone in his office that, you know, do you want to talk? Do you want to meet me? Do you want to meet with me? And to know how they can better support me. And my department, the professors in my department, the dean of my department, they have all reached out to me. And that makes me feel safer that I'm surrounded by people who are supportive, that people, that being in a SLU community, which is, I would like to think that it's a discrimination-free environment, makes me feel safe in a country that I would be targeted at any given moment. So that's why, like, I prefer, like, I don't usually go out a lot. I don't usually, like, you know, go farther places, because I don't know what I might face. So I always like stick to the surroundings, like around my apartment, around my campus, because I know I'm like surrounded by people who will protect me and who will support me.
Is there anything that I didn't ask or say that you want to make sure that you put on the record?
The only thing is just I want the people in the U.S. to educate themselves, to hear our voices, and to stand up for humanity, and to acknowledge our existence and our suffering.
That was Palestinian grad student Intima Abahulu speaking with St. Louis Public Radio reporter Andrea Henderson last week. Since they spoke, Intima has not had further contact with her family. People in the St. Louis region are experiencing loss, mourning, and worry as war rages thousands of miles away. And that's what our local coverage will focus on, sharing the direct experiences of people who live here. If you have personal connections to what's happening in Israel, the Gaza Strip, or the West Bank, and you want to share your experience, send an email to our talk show team. You can reach us at talk@stlpr.org.
This episode was produced and engineered by Andrea Henderson.
It was mixed and edited by Emily Woodbury, with podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
St. Louis on the Air proudly supports local artists by using music from Life Creative Group.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association. Missouri produces wood pallets, railroad ties, white oak barrels, hardwood floors, and more. Details on the variety of products made in the state are at choosewood.com.